Erlen Sports.
Hello and welcome to Verulam Sport on 92.6 FM Radio Verulam, where every week between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. on your Saturday evening, the team behind the award-winning Verulam Sports will debate, dissect and analyse a sporting topic of your choosing. Yes, indeed. This is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, find us across social media, tweet us at Verulam Sport, and keep involved. But for now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport.
Hello, and welcome to 92.6 FM on your Saturday evening, 6 through 7. This is Sportscast, and I am Tony Rice. Looking forward to giving you an exciting discussion and dissection based on a sporting topic of your choosing. Because remember, each and every single week, we say it every week and we passionately mean it. This is your show, each and every single bit, as much as it is ours. So this week, I am flying solo, and appropriately so, because we are on the highway to the danger zone. This week, we're talking Sporting Mavericks. Can't wait. That's come about through a selection of options, again, of your choosing. So, as always, to the amazing Radio Verulam listeners, a big shout out and a massive amount of appreciation, because these debates come from your minds, and I'm looking forward to getting into Sporting Mavericks this week round. So many to consider. I know always you've been so busy getting involved, getting your opinions in. Always a big thank you. Remember, continue to do so. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Get involved, keep involved. It's your show, each and every single bit as much as it is ours. Sporting Mavericks, those who, like Frank Sinatra once upon a time sang, they did it their way. Unique talents, different beats to their own drum, just unique individuals here. And there is something about the human quality where so many of us just want to conform. I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing, but I'm saying that these guys that I'm going to analyze tonight simply refused to do that. Truly unique, gifted individuals who took their gifts and sometimes took them to the nth degree. It's going to be fascinating because one of the common denominators that's going to become apparent as we analyse and consider some of the world's greatest sporting mavericks for you tonight is that there's often a very close relationship between these rarefied, gifted individuals, and they all are, and slightly bad boy approach to the game. Lots of controversy. So it's that kind of genius property that so many people in all different walks of life, be that artists, even business people, politicians, when they've reached a certain level, there is that element of kind of maverick elan, and then the yin to that yang seems to be a little bit of a bad boy property too. Bad girl too. Get involved always. I'd love your opinions on this dichotomy and this dynamic, because it does make for compelling viewing. And let's not forget, sport is an entertainment industry. It keeps us all thrilled. It reminds us of our options and our abilities and the sheer possibilities of the human. So sometimes these characters are necessary, because I would hate a drab world, and I'd loathe a drab sporting world. But anyway, I was talking there about Top Guns and a little bit of a Maverick connection. There are so many Top Guns in the Premier League. Premier League in action, of course. This weekend is round three, and that means that the Verulam Sport, a Premier League prediction league, is well underway. As always, I know you listening in are an absolute genius when it comes to getting your predictions for the Premier League right, aren't you? I know, I can see a smug face already, loving it too. Get involved though. Put your money where that mouth is. It's very, very simple. 3 points if you can predict accurately the exact scoreline in any given game. So 3 points if you can predict accurately the scoreline in any given game across all the Premier League fixtures all season long. 1 point if you get the right result, but perhaps you're just off a touch with the scoreline predictions. No shame in that one. But nil point, nothing whatsoever if you are totally out, totally inaccurate in your predictions. But of course, I know you listening in are not. You're right. You get them right all the time. 3 points each and every one. I know it. Love to hear from you, though. Each and every single week in the Premier League, get involved and compete with us in the Verulam Sport Prediction League for the Premier League. 3 points for an accurate scoreline prediction. 1 point for the correct result, but off a touch with the score. Nil point. Nothing at all if you are dead wrong. We're into week three in the Premier League. That means there's been 2 weeks of action already, and I could give you a little bit of an update on how we are internally faring at this moment in time. It's very tight, not much in it, but the ace man, Mr. Matthew Turvey, remains in the lead, holding a lead. He's got 17 points. I come up in second place, 14 points. Then the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin, alongside the machine, Jason McKenna, deadlocked on 12 points. And our newest recruit, Neil Stock, is currently bringing up the rear with 9 points. But you know, everybody does. It's the oldest sporting cliche in the world. It's a marathon, not a sprint. But sprinting at the head at the moment is Matthew Turvey with 17 points. I am snapping at his heels with 14 points from the first two games or fixtures. And then Jason McKenna, the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin's deadlocked on 12 with Neil Stock on 9 points. Talking GG, the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin, salute you, Double G. Do check him out. He is providing Saints commentary all season long on the Red Button, the Red Live Saints Button on the award-winning Radio Verulam website. So make sure you check that out and get involved. And as I say, and I mean it, this is your show here. And so continue to keep involved with us. And you've been doing just that. So I am eternally grateful and always value your social media engagement. Remember, it's tweet at Verulam Sport. You can email in as well to sport@radioverulam.com. I'll repeat, the social media, the best way, the quickest, and the most efficient way to engage with us is to tweet us at Verulam Sport. Also, though, drop us a note to sport@radioverulam.com. And getting involved just like that this very week, so many people and so many great Maverick shouts. Loving these. Julie from St. Albans has emailed in saying, Paul Gascoigne, Gazza. A sad story, she says. But on the pitch, he was his own person and was a real maverick. Tell you what, Julie, could not agree more. What a talent. I would suggest the greatest talent that this country has ever produced. Again, coming with that kind of maverick bad boy nature. Lots written about Gazza. Some of it is borderline tragic. But on the pitch, there was no doubting his capabilities. Magic in both feet, such imagination. And of course, that iconic image, nobody will ever forget it, of the World Cup 1990 out in Italy, when England tragically lost on penalties to Germany. And of course, Gazza in tears. Reflection of his passion, his drive, and his love for football. He was a true great and very much a maverick spirit. Loving that shout, Julie. Nigel gets involved, goes on to say Ali and then later Tyson. Interesting. His email reads, Ali revolutionized boxing with his unique style in and out of the ring. Iron Mike was not a traditional boxer in style and showed new, different ways to be successful. Great shouts both. Everybody listening in knows how much admiration, love and appreciation I've got for the greatest, Muhammad Ali. And you're right, Nigel. His style was revolutionary and one of the keys to his successes, I would suggest, and it's also available on multiple podcasts, is that his amazing coach, Angelo Dundee, himself a Hall of Famer, really didn't do what a lot of coaches have that kind of tendency to do, which is change technique style. He worked with Ali's natural flair, knowing full well he had a bona fide genius with him there. Ali, of course, again, caught in controversy in his life and his career, and that is the Maverick way. They march to their own beat, and I love it. Ali, an all-time great, the greatest in his own words, and quite frankly, who can deny it? Iron Mike. Now, there's another boxer to conjure with. Goodness me. The baddest man on the planet. And is there a better, more appropriate moniker in all of sport? Don't think I could think of one off the top of my head. Iron Mike, what a machine. In his early career, remember, actually surpassed Ali to become the youngest heavyweight type champion of all time, age barely 21. We're talking great coaches. And when he was under the tutelage of his early coach, Angelo Dundee, and I think it might have been actually Angelo Dundee, beg your pardon, just was great. He honed that kind of raw, animal-like spirit of Tyson's and kind of honed it with real fearsome technique. I mean, there's a real famous quote in boxing, which is, you know, you can plan for it, but you don't know until you hit what you're facing. When you're facing Iron Mike Tyson. Obviously, we all think maybe towards the end of his career, the biting of the ear of Evander Holyfield. Obviously, there was a controversy with various female friends, shall we say. And, you know, his whole life has been turbulent and chaotic, I think it's fair to say. And, well, ain't that just the way of the Maverick? Tell you what, great shout there, Nigel. Appreciate your input. Keep involved, though. If you want to be like Nigel and also Julie, who suggested Gascoigne, keep involved with us. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Drop us a note to sport@radioverulam.com. So many more social media engagement this week. It's been a popular one. Annie has tweeted in saying, Usain Bolt. He had chicken nuggets just before his world record run and had his shoelaces untied. Tell you what, love that shout. I've said before, I don't believe that Usain Bolt fulfilled his potential. And I know that sounds borderline crazy because goodness me, he's one of the most successful, one of the most decorated athletes of all time. And who can forget when he beat the world record, smashing it over 100 meters. He also smashed it over 200 meters. And both times, he's looking around. He's got it done. Put your head down, you're saying. You're going to smash this record and take it onto unsurpassable levels. But goodness me, what a maverick, what a character, what an icon of all sports. One of the most kind of associated men. That image of Usain Bolt, that smile, is just one of those that kind of connects to everybody right around planet Earth. Great, great shout there. Loving that. And I'm loving this one too, from a completely different perspective, but every inch a maverick nevertheless. A big shout out goes to Ian, who tweets us, Brian Clough, Maverick manager, who should have been England manager, but was too Maverick for the suits. Great shout there, can't fault you. Again, if you ever get a chance to look through the archives of the wonderful Verulam Sport podcasts, you can find them, of course you can, on the award-winning Radio Verulam website. Just find the tab podcasts. And there's a great podcast in there that we did a while back now, where we've looked into the greatest sporting movies or documentaries. And an amazing one there is Cluffy. It's so good. And, you know, he was such a character. Simply, again, marched to his own beat. People forget because he's always associated with as a manager. And, you know, who can deny his efforts and his record? You know, back-to-back titles, I think, with Derby. Back-to-back European Cups with Nottingham Forest. A league championship with the unfancied Derby. A league with Nottingham Forest. FA Cups thrown in as well. Much publicised. Never quite did it at Leeds United, but I agree there with Ian. Brian Clough had all the attributes to be a wonderful England manager, but face didn't seem to fit. And all too often, that is a crying shame for me. Brian Clough, a great shout. Every single inch a maverick. And as I was saying, as I began all that kind of preamble about Brian Clough, people forget what a mega player he was, because he's this iconic manager, isn't he? He was a really classy player, I think, for Middlesbrough. Very, very prolific. I don't have the facts before me, but seriously got a great amount of goals and, you know, really believed in what he referred to as proper football. And that's one of the reasons that he kind of clashed with so many who didn't kind of match up to his vision. Very visionary in this sense. I know our friend the Machine McKenna can't be here tonight, but I know, of course, he is a massive, massive appreciator of Johan Cruyff and the way that that has evolved football-wise into the tiki-taka vision and, of course, Pep-style football these days. Well, Cluffy was getting that done way back when, late 60s, early 70s and beyond. He really did have a vision, a philosophy, if you would, of football, and just one of those men that had so much presence, so bigger than life, would have loved to have had an opportunity to enjoy time in his company. Sadly, he has passed away. But I've got to tell you, Ian, loving your shout. Thanks for getting involved. Brian Clough is every single inch a true sporting great and a massive, massive maverick. No questions. Anyway, moving on to our considerations. Thanks for getting involved. Continue to do so. Remember, always, it's your show, every single bit, as much as it is ours. So tweet at Verulam Sports or drop us a note to sport@radioverulam.com. What are the properties of a maverick? Is it always going to be associated with a bad boy style as well as their greatness? Or is it possible to be a maverick who's pure as the shiny sun or what have you? Love your thoughts on that one. I'm not too sure. Everything we're going to analyse today certainly has that kind of double-edged sword to it. But always get involved. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Always get involved, as I mentioned, and I want to hear your maverick considerations. Who are we going to miss? Because inevitably, we always sadly have to miss some. It's just impossible to kind of rattle through and get everybody in. But no, you've got your mavericks. Get involved. Tweet at Verulam Sport. But moving on now, as I mentioned, the Machine McKenna sadly can't be with us this week, but God love him. He's been busy and diligent, and he's given us some suggestions. And his first shout, we had one of our earlier social media engagers, Nigel, saying Ali and also Iron Mike, two mavericks from the world of boxing. Our man, the Machine, also goes boxing world when he introduces his first sporting maverick for our consideration. And he's gone with Sheffield's own, the iconic Prince Nazim Hamid. Echoes of Ali, I couldn't agree more. With his confidence, his trash talk, if you would, and crucially, Ala Ali, his own fighting style, all of which was backed up with mega, mega ability in the ring. Often people forget just how good he was in ring, because he did have this showbiz razzmatazz kind of a personality, which is one of the reasons so many people love him. However, when talking mavericks, Nazim sprung instantly to Jason's mind. The cogs got whirring, the Machine did his algorithms, and the man, the legend, Prince Nazim Hamid, came out near the top when it came to sporting mavericks for him. Can't fault it though. It's a great shout, Jace. He feels he embodied all the attributes associated with the very word maverick. Couldn't agree more. And he is the kind of the living personification, the mental image of what it is to be a maverick, according to the Machine. And again, I am in concurrence. I'm sure you are too. I'm sure you've got memories of Prince Naz, whether that's his in-ring prowess or his showmanship stylings. Get involved. I'd love to hear your views on Prince Naz. Tweet at Verulam Sport. But Jason, again, he's always good at giving us an insight and a profile. And he wants to make a distinction. He says, sometimes we know him from his crazy showmanship, but in the ring, he was at points peerless, emerging from the Sheffield School of Boxing, and he was tutored in his early goings and right up towards the back end of his career by the now departed legendary trainer that is Brendan Ingle. Watching his old training videos, again, let's not forget, our man, the Machine, is himself a scholar of the world of boxing. And again, I'm sure he'll be getting in the ring very soon if our world permits it for charity. Again, massive respect to the machine, Jason McKenna, for his efforts as always. It is gratefully appreciated. But again, Jason studying the NAS as he did, watching old training videos, he said it was really apparent, shone out, that even as a very young individual, his sheer talent was fiercely displayed. He had incredible movement and devastating speed. No questions about that. But also, of all those who trained with him, they attest to the fact, and let's not forget this, that he was a rock-hard puncher. And he, Jason adds, had rockets in his arms. Awesome shout there. And again, let's not forget, he had an amazing professional record, only one blemish on it, and an 84% a KO knockout ratio. Goes to show, again, Naz has the skills to pay those bills. The story, the journey of Nazim began in 1992 when he turned professional, aged only 18, entering the ring with that unusual southpaw style, which is very awkward for so many to conquer and deal with. Again, making him very hard to fight against. And it was argued his fight against Vincenzo Balcarestro, in which he claimed the European bantamweight crown, also shocked many people who were watching. A lot of boxing purists, don't you just love the purists? They always want to change everything. Everything has to be done just so. No place for mavericks in the purist world, it would seem. I love a maverick, I really do. Naz definitely is one. But anyway, a lot of boxing purists didn't like Naz due to his methodology. And again, that maverick quality, very much, again, shades of Muhammad Ali, as we've analysed in the past. But also, a la Ali, he would be prone to in-fight taunting, kind of almost sticking his chin out as if to say, hit me if you can. Again, not one for the purists, certainly maverick stylings. But like I say, boxing is entertainment, sport is entertainment, and he was nothing if not an entertainer. And truly, truly one of the great mavericks all time. Great shout. I'm really loving this, Jason. Good work. He was a lot of boxing purists, as I say, didn't like his methodology. In many ways, I guess the people found it offensive to the opponent. A little bit disrespectful, perhaps. That's also going to come up again in today's conversation, that kind of bravado element of our mavericks, another interesting quality. However, the kind of school of thought, again, that quote-unquote purist school of thought, was that Nazim, if he did find it so easy, he should have boxed instead of reducing or operating with schoolyard antics. I liked it. I personally did. I mean, you know, I think he was a rare talent and he could justify his antics indeed. But if you disagree, if you found it a little bit offensive, I'd love to hear from you. Do get involved. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Be very keen to hear from you. As I say, that was his appeal, though. Boxing, as we've referenced, is entertainment. And there can be no question that this entertainer drew the big fights and drew the big crowds. Huge, huge turning point in the career and the career trajectory of Naz. came with perhaps a great promoter's influence, Frank Warren. He was able to make almost skyrocket Naz's career a touch and got an early bid at winning a title. The 95 fight we're referencing here, goodness me, feels like only a few minutes ago, but it's 25 years ago, this fight against Steve Robinson. Again, got under the skin of those purists. They thought the fight was too soon for Naz, that he hadn't done enough. However, again, as if to be fueled by this criticism, Naz got the business done emphatically in the ring. A round eight victory. Round eight saw him winning. It was such easy style, really. He showed that it was indeed the very tip of the iceberg, the very top of the sport, which is where he belonged. And although the prince was more than just regal, he was the king in the ring, earning titles at featherweight, bantamweight, and super bantamweight. And as I mentioned, what a career record he boasted. 37 fights, 36 wins, only one loss. And the loss was in his penultimate fight. And that boxing record, again, the only time he got beat or lost the belt was when he simply couldn't. He dominated his divisions to such a degree, it was oftentimes that he had to either face conflicting opponents at the same time. So he's very good. He's certainly a maverick. But being a human, he can't split himself or splice himself, be in two places at once. So it was inevitable that he had to relinquish along the way some of the great titles that he claimed throughout a stellar career. Illustration of this was in 1999. He chose to lose the WBC title so that he could gain and move on to gain the WBO title. The arrogance may have caught up with Nazim, though. And it was arrogance. There's a fine dividing line between arrogance and confidence. So many great sports stars. You think of Ali, the greatest. Well, again, arrogance and confidence, they are one and the same. Such a fine dividing line. But the arrogance did eventually perhaps catch up with the prince. The only loss of his career came against another legendary boxer in Barrera, when it was felt that Naz was much more relaxed. Whereas Barrera had trained, quote unquote, like a monk to get the unexpected win. Naz himself was massively favoured and favoured by the tipsters. But again, credit to the boxing legend that is Barrera. He had a plan. He kind of nullified the southpaw advantage of Barrera, kind of moving his body in a way to just always stick one step ahead of Naz. Great fight that really kind of springs to my mind. Again, maybe he was a little undercooked, Nazim Hamid, that was coming in to that fight where, again, he was heavily, heavily favoured. It was a laissez-faire attitude, as I say, also continued into his next and unexpected, early in a relatively short career, really, his final fight. Like a true maverick, Naz never truly retired and barreled out at the very top, wanting more and more importantly, leaving us, the fans, not the purists, the fans, really wanting more, because he was, like I say, so good in ring, so entertaining out and in ring style, just one of the greats all time, sadly missed. Again, injuries caught up with him in the end, and that is why he made the decision to quit the world of boxing. But like a true maverick, even his departure was on his terms and Allah Sinatra done his way. Going out at the top in 2002, his final fight would draw an amazing 11 million views. Let's not forget as well, Prince Nazim was a family man. He valued time with them above all, I would argue, and he was not necessarily the most dedicated trainer. In many ways, perhaps this would hold him back, but in others, he added to his legendary status and zeal, as it was left many to wonder, perhaps, what he may well have achieved if he had a more of a kind of laser focus on boxing. We'll never know. We'll enter the world of speculation, but I know you've got views on that. Could Naz have done more? Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Truly would love to hear from you. Get involved. But all of this makes Prince Nazim's maverick narrative so enticing, so compelling. Each fight was bigger, more elaborate. His entrances were absolutely iconic, and he will be remembered. They will ring on through the ages. One of the best entertainers in boxing, one of the most talented ring masters, and it's true, true maverick, as he did it all in his own regal fashion. Tell you what, love Naz. One of the all-time icons. Great, great shout there. But you may well have Nazim views. Get involved. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Really, really would love to hear from you. Your thoughts on the maverick that is Prince Nazim Hamid. Just finally to wrap up a little bit on Naz, because I want us not to forget again, granted this is framed by Maverick, and he truly was, but I really want us to drill into the fact that he was unique and most critically in ring, truly, truly, truly gifted. Back in 2016, ESPN actually ranked Nazim Hamid at number 22 on the list of the top 25 pound-for-pound fighters of the last quarter of a century. Think how many greats have stepped into the ring. ESPN, who know their onions, have named Naz number 22 on the best 25 pound-for-pound fighters going back a quarter of a century. And I'm sure he would still be knocking on the door of that list, according to many. The Ring magazine also ranked Naz 46th greatest puncher of all time. And again, that KO record, let's remind you of it. 37 fights, 36 wins, only one defeat, 31 by way of knockout. So an 84% KO record. Truly, the man was a boxing machine. And maybe if only if he had applied that more machine-like attitude to boxing, goodness knows what else he may well have gone on to achieve. But like I say, the facts ring true. They ring volumes. And he is one of the all-time legends, one of the greatest sports stars certainly Sheffield has ever produced. And I would argue that spans the United Kingdom too. Gotta love Prince Nazim Hamid. Moving on and switching it up to a different sport now. I'm going in here with Austin Healey. Great name, that. Obviously, the classic car, the Austin Healey. And Austin Healey was every inch as slick, as smooth, and as rapid as the sports star, the Austin Healey. Healey was born October 1973. He earned 51 England caps, 2 Lions caps. And he was renowned for his versatility, representing England at scrum half, fly half, fullback, and wing. I'll repeat that: scrum half, fly half, fullback, and wing. Mr. Versatile, like a waffle. But I don't want to waffle on too much. I want to make it very clear. That is also maybe his Achilles heel. Goodness knows what he could have done had he focused in on becoming more of a specialist. However, that versatility as well did open doors. He was so useful as a kind of utility player, but so skillful. There is a school of thought that this Maverick almost was a borderline master of many trades, but not necessarily a total jack-in-the-box focused individual on one. Goodness knows what he might well have become had he done that. But like I say, his skill, his flair, his imagination, totally up there. One of the most thrilling players I've ever witnessed live on a rugby pitch. Healey initially burst onto the rugby scene back in 1994, and he was then focused in as a flying winger for Oral before joining Leicester Tigers, the club he would stay at for his remainder of his career for a great decade spanning 96 through to 2006. He would go on to make 237 appearances and accumulate over 300 points for Tigers, 322 in total. Just a reflection of his dedication, his focus, and his utter skill, again representing Tigers across the back line. In fact, it was here at Leicester that his versatility really came to the fore. He was initially signed from Oral as a scrum half, but he would line up in nearly every position across the back line. Truly astonishing. Whilst I've kind of put it into context and said maybe had he chosen to master a position, he could have done more. It does have to be said, there are very, very, very few players playing the game now and who have ever played the game of rugby union who have the ability to adapt to the different unique challenges that all those different positions possess. So again, it is a strange one for me, bit of a paradox. It is such a gift, it made him stand out, but it was also that Achilles heel perhaps. Bottom line, you're thinking versatility, and I'm also telling you that's a reflection of a maverick genius right there. Healy would go on to earn his first England cap whilst at Leicester Tigers back in 1997 against Ireland. And he would tour then with a victorious 97 Lions team who toured South Africa, winning there for the first time in many years. He gained two Lions caps that tour. Healy would play in five or six Nations tournaments between 1998 through to 2002, as well as representing England at the 1999 World Cup. Maybe 99 was when he was at the peak of his rare talents. His standout performances saw him voted both Leicester Tigers and Allied Dunbar Player of the Season. Great year for Austin. 99. Now, one of my personal favourite sporting moments all time, and I've been very privileged to enjoy so much exciting sporting moments, both live here representing Radio Verulam, and just before that in my earlier life. But one of my all-time favourite sporting moments came back in 2001, where I was actually at the crowd alongside Family Rice at the Parc de Paris. And this was the scene of the Heineken Cup final, the Heineken Champions Cup. The previous year, Tigers had been beaten in the final by Breve. So they were up for revenge. And I got to witness live the mercurial Healy, the maverick Healy, who would switch to fly half, again representing and demonstrating that amazing versatility. He would pull off a quite simply scintillating break, which would lead to the deciding try, which I can see now flashing in my mind's eye as Healy fizzed a wonderful pass at full pace, which was picked up by Leon Lloyd down the wing, who scooted home. That would see Tigers pull off an incredible, almost impossible 34-30 win over the home favourites, Stade Francais. It was Leicester Tigers' first Heineken Champions Cup, and it was inspired by a moment of genius by the maverick Austin Healy. Healy's name is always going to be firmly associated with not only Leicester Tigers, but Leicester Tigers' successes, particularly in the Heineken Champions Cup. He replicated that genius opportunity and skill in the final the following year, where he would score the decisive and winning try as Leicester beat Munster 15-9 to defend their title in 2002, securing back-to-back titles at the European Cup for the team from the East Midlands. Going back to 2001, though, his form for both club, Leicester Tigers, we mentioned, and country, saw him earn another Lions jersey. Despite impressing in midweek games, Healy could not force himself into the Test team. The tour, though, perhaps was once again a highlight of his maverick nature. In a Guardian column, Healy dubbed the Australian second row, Justin Harrison, a plank. What an insult. I just love that. A plank. Harrison would then go on to play a crucial and indeed decisive role in the deciding Test, stealing a crucial line-out, which would seal the win for Australia in front of their home fans. So arguably, Healy inspired Harrison, who was truly dominant in that decisive final Test. Healy would miss out a place in the victorious 2003 World Cup team, but his glittering career saw him claim two Heineken Cups back-to-back, as I mentioned, four back-to-back league titles with Leicester Tigers. In 2005-2006, his last season as a player, we again saw the maverick side of Healy. Whilst Leicester topped the table, they would be beaten out by Sale Sharks in the Premiership final. Healy would throw his runners-up medal away, asserting, "I don't do losers' medals." Tell you what, a man of massive talents, as we've referenced on the pitch, capable of playing to an elite level, an international level across the back line. He has multiple talents across life as well. He was part of the sixth series of Strictly Come Dancing, finishing fourth. The Leicester Lip, we talked about Muhammad Ali. The Louisville Lip was Ali's original nickname. Healy was dubbed the Leicester Lip, is a regular on TV, and has migrated naturally into a truly fine broadcaster and reporter for rugby. A real great, a man who had a big heart, a massive mouth, but an amazing, amazing gift for rugby union. One of my favourite sporting stars of all time. I'll never ever forget that 2001 final there with Family Rice in Paris. And it was just a lovely step. And then the speed and the imagination to keep running and the skill he showed to visit at full pace to Leon Lloyd, who romped home, sealing a win for Tigers, their first Heineken Cup triumph. And then, as I say, to back that up the following year. Such a shame for me he wasn't a feature of the 2003 Rugby World Cup winning team, something that would elude him. But for consistency, for longevity, what a star man. A real great, really always appreciate Austin Healy. But as with Naz, he did it his way, never quite meeting in line with authorities. And I love the fact that he's almost now poacher turned gamekeeper, but he is a bona fide brilliant, brilliant broadcaster, always willing to back up his thoughts with facts. And again, the credibility that comes with such a glittering career. Austin Healy, I salute you. You're one of the great mavericks of all time sport. And I'm sure you listening have opinions. Again, that maverick quality to be so versatile, to be so well-versed at multiple positions. But does it maybe display a lack of discipline to focus in on one and really say, this is my art, this is my gift, this is my position? I don't know. Again, I'm an Austin Healy fan and admirer, but I'm sure you've got views. Do tweet us. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Get involved. Dearly, dearly would love to hear from you. So please keep involved. Make sure you keep involved all season long with the Saints. They have been unbeaten in their 8 matches up until now. And their 9th was earlier on today. But you can listen in all season long. Their campaign gets underway for real on October the 3rd, I believe, at Clarence Park. And we will be following on the live provided through the Red Button on the Radio Verulam, award-winning Radio Verulam website, all season long. Listen live and listen in to GG, Graham Griffin, for all your Saints analysis. All season long, every home match, live, 90 minutes in full, live commentary through the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin. And I tell you what, it was an honour and a privilege to be at Clarence Park last weekend, providing a little bit of co-commentary there with GG, and the Saints were able to eke out a 0-0 draw. And as I say, I don't know the result this earlier today. I'm sure you listened in on that listen live button, but it was, you know, up until today, they were unbeaten in this preseason run, and that is phenomenal. We'll see if they can build on this great momentum, this great start to the preseason, and we'll see how that transpires as the season gets underway in just over a week or so's time. And where has time flown? I cannot believe how fast things do fly. People have been engaging. They've agreeing with Austin Healy as a maverick. Some people are suggesting, and I think this is a great shout, Kevin Peterson. Tell you what, goodness me, one of the greats all time, over 8,000 test runs. But again, a man who courted controversy, obviously of South African birth, and then towards the end of his time at England would perhaps be tweeting his colleagues or his compatriots in the South African team. So courted controversy his whole career, but my goodness gracious, he could wield a bat. Love that shout. Great also to hear from Jason. Again, always value his work on Prince Nazim Hamid. Love your views on Naz. One of the greatest pound-for-pound boxers all time, but with that mercurial quality to boot. So we have shone a light on some fabulous sporting mavericks already, discussing the wonderful Austin Healy. Fabulous name, Healy Austin by name, Austin Healy-like by nature. We've also considered the wonderful mercurial boxing talent that was, is Prince Nazim Hamid. We're moving on, though, to the world of football. Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Tell you what, this guy courts controversy. He is a law into and of himself. And that kind of puts him in a very interesting personality category, a la almost like we've discussed Lewis Hamilton, very divisive. He splits opinions. Now, I'm going to put my own stance on this. And I got to tell you, I am a massive, massive Zlatan Ibrahimovic fan. And I shouldn't be. I mean, he's ego incarnate. He refers to himself consistently in the third person. He's arguably the biggest mercenary in footballing history. But he does it his way. And there is some kind of, just for me, charm about his authenticity. And he delivers on the pitch. For me, Zlat is one of the greatest sporting stars of this generation. And a massive, massive maverick, though, to boot. I'm going to predicate this and deliver a bit of an analysis on his wonderful career, not shying away from those myriad controversies. But for me, there's a sort of equivalency to Zlat of maybe a Djokovic in tennis. And what I mean by that is, when we talk about the greats of our era, tennis-wise, and it's been a phenomenal era of men's tennis, and obviously Serena and others in the ladies' game getting it done. But from the male perspective, it almost seems like it falls into two camps as to who is the finest player of this generation. And then both of these guys get coveted as the best all time. I'm talking about the imperious Roger Federer, who at the moment remains the winningest Grand Slam tennis performer all time, and then the man who is borderline invincible at Roland Garros, and Nadal. In third, and with an element of age on his side, is Djokovic, Croatia's Djokovic. And for some reason, he kind of gets forgotten in that mix. Now, the reason I spin that back and kind of frame my Zlatan stance with that reference is because when we're talking the best footballers of our generation, it really seems to be a bit of a dichotomy. And that is, are you a Messi person or do you fall into the Ronaldo camp? We've had long conversations upon that, and it's not the time or place for me to offer my tuppence on it tonight. However, and I justify this throughout this conversation, but Zlatan statistically is right up there with those two greats. And he's done it across continents, again, an almost mercenary-esque approach to his career. But he has consistently delivered on all kinds of planes, on all kinds of challenges. He's Sweden's all-time top goal scorer. As I say, for me, he backs up his words. Not all of them I agree with. He justifies that galactic-sized ego by what he delivers on the pitch. And because of that, and because of that, just the sheer audacity with which he conducts himself, I just admire the man. Again, I'm going to not shy away from his controversial qualities, but the theme of tonight's show, of course, is sporting mavericks. And truly, Zlat is every single inch of his Herculean physique a maverick. And what can I tell you? I just love a maverick. I really, really do. And that's why I'm loving this conversation. Anyway, as I mentioned, for me, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is the ultimate sporting mercenary, but in every sense, the maverick genius. Born on the 3rd of October, 1981, he is considered by many to be one of the great strikers of this generation, although not necessarily, as I've referenced, in that twin debate, Messi versus Ronaldo. He's in the mix and I think is worthy of being in that conversation. Although for me, too often, it's kind of just a binary one. So that's in the mix, folks, and the facts will back that up. And I would say these facts, putting him in the best of a generation stratosphere, means that he naturally enters into the beautifully subjective debate, one of the greatest of all time, crossing all eras. It's a big statement, but I'm going to justify it. Nevertheless, always, and I love this about our show, it's yours, every single bit, as much as it is ours. So, I know you've got opinions on the Zlat. Get them in. Want to hear from you. Tweet us at Varulam Sports. Is he just too much? Is his talents overshadowed by his ego? Love to hear your views. Keep them coming. Tweet at Varulam Sport. Keep involved. Moving on, though. His career has seen him claim 31. I'll repeat that because it's astonishing. 31 trophies and in excess of 500 career goals. Absolutely phenomenal. And that's included a goal in each of the last four decades. Goals in the 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and into the 2020s. Goals spanning four decades. Wonderful. His career would begin in his native Sweden with Malmo back in 1999, and his talent was recognised by Ajax, who he joined in 2001. It was with the Dutch Masters that his reputation flourished, and his two-year tenure, he would claim 35 goals in just 74 games. 35 goals in just 74 games, just shy of a goal every other game ratio. Absolutely world class. His performances caught the eye of some of the biggest clubs across the continent of Europe. A bit of a bidding war, but he would eventually join Juve in 2004. He would progress on to Inter Milan, for whom he would win three back-to-back Serie A titles. In 2009, he would move on to Barcelona in a huge sale, and he would only stay with the Catalan Giants for one season, where his giant ego and maverick nature saw him clash with the iconic manager, Pep Guardiola. Their recognised uberstar, we've already referenced him tonight, one of the other men in the mix for generational great Lionel Messi, would never fuse with Zlat. Maybe there's only room for one once-a-generation player in that club. He returned to Italy in 2011, signing for AC Milan, again showing no particular allegiances to the other side of the Milano footballing infrastructure. For AC, he would go on to win another Serie A title in 2010-2011. And then in another huge move, he would join PSG, where he scored 113 goals in just 122 games. I'll repeat that, goal-to-game ratio, because again, it means that goal-to-game ratio-wise, he's up there with Messi and Ronaldo. For PSG, claiming 113 goals in just 122 games for Paris Saint-Germain. He would add, of course, to his impressive hall of trophies, claiming four consecutive Ligue 1 crowns, finishing top scorer in France for three seasons. And that record referenced already of 113 goals for PSG means he remains PSG's all-time top scorer. This feat was bagged in October 2015. He would then progress to another European giant, as is his modus operandi, moving in 2016 to the Theatre of Dreams and Old Trafford to represent Manchester United. Whilst he was at Old Trafford, his winning ways continued. Everywhere he goes, he wins. I have this little phrase that I'm sure you're aware of. I say it all the time. It's a tautology, but it makes sense to me. Winners win. Every single place Zat has plied his trade and demonstrated his artistry, he has won. Titles galore. And for me, you always have to doff your cap to a real winner. Honestly, I'm going to drill into not only his maverick qualities, but some of a litany of controversial moments from a man who I've already stated has a huge ego. For those reasons, he's almost one of the kind of embodiments of everything that I find a little bit loathsome about the human spirit and person. However, he does it in such an indomitable way, with such almost elan, that I just can't help but be awed by Zlatan. But we will progress. His titles with Manchester United included a Community Shield and a UEFA Europa League. He would then move in another big money move to a different continent this time, moving out to the US of A, the United States, where he would bag 52 goals in just 56 games. Again, I'll repeat that because it is another trend of the Zlatan MO, modus operandi, that his goals to game ratio is staggering. For the LA Galaxy, he scored 52 goals in 56 games. One could argue there that the quality of opposition was, in relative terms, a step down from the level that he was accustomed to. But as always, one can only deliver at the level that one is performing at. And 52 goals in 56 games for LA Galaxy in the MLS is an astonishing feat. And indeed, when he claimed 30 goals back in 2014 for LA Galaxy, that represented the most regular season goals in an MLS season. 30 goals back in 2014, the most ever in the history of Major League Soccer. I think it's becoming quite apparent that this guy backs up everything that he says. And thus, as much as it pains me to say, can I think get away with referring to himself in the third person? Before I move on, though, always, I know some of you listening to this will have your skin crawling. You will be almost hurling abuse at me for trying to defend Zlat, to elevate him to that Messi and Ronaldo level. I can just see you. Please get involved. I'm not the doyen or the guru of all things sporting, just a massive fan and a massive appreciator. And for some reason that almost defies my own reasoning, I am a Zlatan appreciator. So please get involved. If you agree with me, likewise, love to hear from you. If you're in the Zlatan King camp, I salute you. Get involved. Love to hear from you. Tweet at Realm Sport. Likewise, if you find him borderline offensive, justify that statement, and I know it'll be easy to do just that. Tweet me at Verulam Sport and keep engaged. He's now back with AC Milan, currently suffering from the dreaded COVID-19, proving that even the Zlat is not immune. But his stellar career has seen him earn 116 Sweden caps, scoring 62 goals for his country, and that figure of 62 goals in 116 games, again, a ratio at international level better than a goal in every other match, is unmatched in Swedish football history. He is their all-time top scorer with 62 goals from 116 caps. In one of those goals, which I'm pained to recall, but from an objective stance, wowed, because it just embodied everything that is the Zlat, included a phenomenal four-goal haul in a 4-2 victory over England. And the fourth was a truly astonishing individual and mesmeric maverick goal
an overhead kick, and this would be claim the 2013 FIFA Plus award for goal of the year. His unreal overhead kick against England was the 2013 FIFA Plus goal of the year. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure many of you have. I'm sure many of you are almost cringing at it because it was so wonderful, so audacious, but of course, come against the Three Lions. If you haven't, though, do yourself a favour to witness a moment of sheer artistry. Check out on YouTube or on social media Zlatan Ibrahimovic overhead kick versus England. You will not be unimpressed. He's been named into the FIFA Pro World 11 in 2013. He's made UEFA Team of the Year four times between 2007 and 2014. A really astonishing career. He has become the only, I'll repeat that, the only player to score in the Champions League with six different clubs: Ajax, Juventus, Inter and AC Milan, Barcelona and Paris Saint-Germain. So in football all time, a reflection of his maverick, mercenary nature, but also his ability to deliver in different football structures, systems and cultures. He is the only player all time to score at the Champions League level for six different clubs. He stands alone as the only player to score on his debut in the Premier League, Serie A, La Liga, Ligue 1 and the Champions League. Again, Zlat stands alone, unique in the history of football, to score on debut in the Premier League, in Serie A, at La Liga, in Ligue 1 and at Champions League levels. So we've spoken in the past about the pressures that strikers face when they make these big moves. It sometimes becomes almost just a wait. And if you, they have to wait to get that first goal, which is, of course, what they are amply rewarded to achieve, then pressure builds. Zlat laughs in the face of pressure. As I say, the only player to score on debut in the Premier League, at Serie A, in La Liga, at Ligue 1 and Champions League. He is not unique, but in a company of only two alongside Roque Santa Cruz, as the two players in history all time to score goals in four different decades. For Zlat, that began in the 90s, took in goals throughout the 2000s, in the 2010s and now into the 2020s. He and Roque Santa Cruz, the only players all time to bag goals across four different decades. I mean, these are facts. This is not me just kind of making things up or adding to a mystique. When I say Zlat delivers, he consistently delivers and is eked out a very unusual, quasi-unique place in lots of categories of football history. Like I say, for these reasons, he has to be included in the debate for who absolutely owns the right to be called the greatest player of this generation. Again, I think you're discerning by now that I'm a little bit of a fan of the man that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But these facts, this unique career that he's paved, continues. I mentioned that he must enter into the Messi-Ronaldo debate. And alongside those two greats, he's in a company of only three, himself, Messi and Ronaldo, to have scored double figures for league goals in each of the last 11 seasons. So across those last 11 seasons, only three players, the two that are considered the greatest of our era, Messi and Ronaldo, and Zlat, have scored double figures across each of the last 11 seasons. I mean, it's phenomenal because, again, one of the other emblems, one of the true qualities that you look for when you're picking out bona fide world class. And that phrase these days is just spewed out such that it's become almost redundant. For me, the key to being justifiably known as a world-class player, an elite, a generation definer, is consistency. And if that isn't a model of consistency, literally putting himself in the mix with Messi and Ronaldo for scoring double figures across 11 consecutive seasons, then I do not know what is. It's an elite club, and again, only three active players, including once again the icons, the legends, Messi and Ronaldo. So he's in that elite club for being only three active players to have over 550 goals in official competitions. Indeed, if we're talking historical context, if you are looking for any more justification for my assertion that he deserves to be not only in the mix for the greatest of this generation, but certainly in the conversation for greatest all time, then check this one out. Again, this is a fact. This is not speculation. This is not hyperbole. It is a black and white, hard as you like fact. Zlat is the 13th top scorer in football history. So since the beautiful game existed, think how many wonderful, talented players have performed in all that span. Just give yourself a second to ponder on that and then recognize this. All time, only 12 other players who've ever kicked a ball at the highest level, indeed going down to lower levels, only 12 other players in the history of the beautiful game have scored more goals than Zlatan Ibrahimovic. If you just want to get it to a Premier League level, if you just want to get it to that British quality, whereby, again, he won titles with Manchester United, the Community Shield and the UEFA Europa League, he's carved out for himself a place in Premier League history, which is there in the record books. It can never be stripped or denied. Zlatan bagged the 25,000th Premier League goal in the history of the Premier League. So taking it from 24,999 goals, take a bow, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you netted the 25,000th goal in the era of the Premier League. Just a little sliver of English footballing history that the great Swede claimed. However, he is a maverick. There's no question about it. A maverick genius, I would suggest. But his career has been littered, peppered with controversy. And because of that, it maybe detracts from some of his prestige. I don't want it to. I want to set it apart. But I will just list a few of this career of controversy. And I would argue, like we've discussed with Austin Healey, like we've analysed in Nazim, in many ways, the trademark of the maverick genius is this kind of bad boy-esque quality. Not my place to psychoanalyze or suggest that that is part of their makeup. It is, though, very suggestive that this common denominator of controversy goes hand in glove with the maverick genius. And I will refer to that again in our final maverick. I'm going to bring the great Ronnie O'Sullivan to the table or the bays in a matter of moments. Again, controversy is a theme. But Zlat's controversies, goodness me, they are wide and varied. He's been involved in some violent incidents with teammates. Again, there's no questioning about it. There's no debate. Zlatan has an ego which is planet-sized. And maybe that's one of the reasons why so many can't get on board with him. And if you fall into that camp, honestly, I would love your views. Do tweet us. I know you've got views on all things Sporting Mavericks. And I just know you've got views on the controversial figure that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Do get involved. Tweet at Verum Sport. But yeah, violent incidents with teammates. Playing for Malmo, his junior team, the team which he burst onto the scene with. He actually had a fight with a teammate during training. And so the teammate's father wanted the other players to sign a petition to get Zlat out of the team. During his spell at Barcelona, I think I've already referenced, he had a very noted falling out with a great Pep Guardiola, which would culminate in a dressing room incident in which it's claimed Zlatan would throw a training kit box across the room, hurling insults also at Pep. It was a very short tenure at the Catalan giant, although, of course, was Zlat not removed from goals. He was involved in a fist fight with a Milan teammate after Ibrahimovic made a two-footed tackle in training, followed up by a headbutt. There's a short canon here, and it's been writ large throughout the Zlatan career. In 2012, with PSG, he received a two-match ban for kicking Saint-Étienne goalkeeper Stéphane Ruffin in the chest. So once again, that violent, explosive nature, that maverick quality comes to the fore. Lyon coach Hubert Fournier accused Zlatan of abusing officials, stating back in January 2015 that all the referees in the league get insulted by this person. In addition, he's engaged in multiple incidents while with the national team. After Sweden's 1-0 victory over the Faroe Islands back in October 2012, he was accused of foul play and insults and was described as arrogant, childish and ignorant. French Sports Daily, one of the greatest newspapers in the world, L'Equipe, branded Ibrahimovic and also Ronaldo, as it goes, Cristiano Ronaldo, the most arrogant footballers in the world. I don't think many would disagree, both of whom do back it up and deliver on the pitch. In 2013, he actually came under fire from the Swedish football national team for an interview published on Christmas Day by a Swedish paper, in which he would be quoted as making very derogatory statements about the nature of the female game and their rights to certain economic equivalencies. Not my place today to open Pandora's box. Not my place to defend Zlat here. Everybody who listens to Verum Sport and Verum Sport podcasting knows I'm a massive advocate for the right for women to earn every single penny that they can and to push up that and to have true parity of opportunity. But he does make many, many derogatory statements in terms of the present qualities of the female game, not a great deal of which I think anybody can truly advocate. In November 2019, Ibrahimovic would actually show such audacity that he brought a nearly 25% stake, 23.5% stake in Stockholm-based club Hammarby, which was literally the local rivals to his Malmo, where it all began. So many controversies in the Zlatan career. And I know you've got opinions on him. I'd love to hear from you. Tweet at Verulam Sport. I am not defending these moments, these flash moments, which includes violence, which includes derogatory statements about the female game. But what I would say is he does deliver on the pitch, and his ego is backed up by performance. Does that justify it? It's not the time nor the place to argue yay or nay. It just means that overall, when I consider Zlat, I begrudgingly raise a glass and maintain, for so many reasons, that he has earned the right to be considered one of the greatest footballers of this generation and indeed all time. Truly a great. But I know this debate on him will continue. It will rage. I'd love to hear from you. Honestly, if you fall into the pros lap camp, get involved. Tweet at Verum Sport. If, on the other hand, you find him something of a divisive character and just too much of an ego, too many moments in his career where he wasn't able to fit well with a bigger picture and the team, too many moments, perhaps, where his outbursts were just a little bit outrageous. You can have a lot of fun if you're a fan of memes, just hunting down Zlatan quotes. It is offensive to me when anybody refers to themselves in the third person. The Zlat, somehow, despite myself, has got my bite in, but I don't deny the elements of controversy. I dearly would love your views on Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Tweet us at Verum Sport. Tweet us, of course, across other sporting mavericks, which we may have missed. Of course, the nature of any show is that there is only a finite amount of time to play with. And always, thanks to you, the listener, you give us such compelling topics for debate that we could analyse them forever and a day. Can't go into everybody, alas. But I know you've got opinions on sporting mavericks. I'd love your thoughts on, is it the case that there must be a bit of a acceptance that these geniuses who go by their own drum and on the pitch maybe capture moments that mere mortals cannot, have to have in the trade-off, the yin and yang, an element of controversy, an element of mercurial qualities? I really would love your views, and I'm sure you've got fascinating ones. Tweet us at Verum Sports. But now, to wrap things up, we sometimes talk about the comedian's comedian, the chef's chef. Well, I'll tell you what, this last and final maverick, I think you could say, is the Mavericks' maverick, Ronnie O'Sullivan. The Rocket, Ronnie O'Sullivan. I mean, his career is so special. He's got in excess of 1,000 century breaks, 1,061 century breaks. He's a six-time world champion back in 2001, 2004, 2008, 2012, 2013, and just recently in the weird year of our Lord, 2020. That record of six is second all-time behind the titan that is Stephen Hendry. Six times and reigning world snooker champion, as I say, just one off the legendary Stephen Hendry. He holds a record, 7 Masters Championships and 7 UK Championships. Also, that 7 UK Championships is a record. He is the most successful player in the history of the Triple Crown with 20 titles. That Triple Crown includes the already referenced world snooker champion, the Masters champion and the UK championship. Those three great titles represent the Triple Crown of snooker. He is all time the most successful in that Triple Crown pursuit with a haul of 20 titles. Astonishing. He also holds the record of most ranking titles with 37. And his career success has seen him clock up just in prize money. Forget sponsorship, endorsements and other monetizing modes that great sporting stars have earned. Just in career prize money, he's clocked up £11.6 million. A bona fide prodigy, Ronnie made his first competitive century aged only 10. Goodness me, when I was 10, I was just happy to be tootling around a rugby pitch and, merry as the days were long. But if you'd asked me to make a century break now, let alone at 10, to save the world, I would have to wave the white flag and say, we've had a good innings. That ain't going to happen. Age 10 and you're smashing in a century. Amazing. He would get his first recorded competitive maximum, many ways the holy grail of snooker, a 147, just 5 years later, aged only 15. I mean, we are talking Mozart, Beethovenian levels of prodigious talent on display. He'd become a pro just a year after that first competitive maximum, aged just 16, back in 1992. And he would claim his first ranking title, the UK Championship, just 1 year later, aged 17 and 358 days. This remains the standard as the youngest player in snooker history to be a champion in a pro ranking tournament. Little slice of history, but he's made a career out of making history. Obviously, we bring Ronnie O'Sullivan to this conversation because we're talking sporting mavericks, and we're going to drill into his maverick qualities in a little moment. It would also be occasionally erratic moments. Like I say, it does seem that tragic trade-off for genius is a temperament prone to extremes, and this extrema type is O'Sullivan's devil and angel, if you would. But I want to just focus on his other phenomenal qualities, one of which is longevity. And I use the word consistency when I'm referring to my own personal key to the definition of world class. Now, Ronnie's longevity is another phenomenal property, and sometimes not one that goes hand in glove with the maverick genius. So it's credit to him, and indeed Zlat previously focused on, that they do have that consistent and longevity, building up, of course, a body of work as opposed to just flashes of genius. But this longevity is writ large in the fact that he's competed in 28 consecutive world championships. 28, goodness me, between 1993 and present day. Of course, he is the reigning, defending world champion, winning just recently at the spiritual home of snooker, the Crucible, up in Sheffield. His victory there just a few months ago, when he was aged 44 and 254 days, made him the second oldest behind Ray Reardon. So he's gone from the youngest to claim a title to the second oldest, which means if we set aside all the moments of kind of erratic maverick qualities, which we'll be delved into, and just set that in a little bubble, you're looking at a man who has that kind of quality, not just of longevity, but of mental fortitude and steel and will to keep going, to persevere, and to overcome odds. Now, they are the properties of every winner, of everybody who deserves the title world class. So, love your views on Ronnie and his maverick ways. And is he, as I said at the start here, the maverick's maverick? And what does that even mean if it's true? What's your thoughts on mavericks generally? I'd love to hear from you. Keep involved. Embrace the danger zone, the highway to the danger zone, as we continue on with this wonderful conversation on mavericks. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Ronnie literally had a real unique and rare gift at the Green Bays, and it's seen him, as I mentioned, clock up in excess of 1,000 career century breaks, 1,061 and counting. A milestone, 1,000th, was achieved at the 2019 Players' Championship, and it is unparalleled in the sport's history. He is so far ahead, it's scary. I think the next nearest rival has around about, you know, it's into the 700s, but he is leagues ahead in terms of clocking up centuries. And again, just reflects his majesty, his genius as a snooker player. He also holds the record for most officially recognised 147s with 15, and one of the finest moments in all of sports. It was poetry in motion, if that makes any sense, from the relatively sedentary sport of snooker. But he has the nickname the Rocket, and he skyrocketed the fastest maximum in snooker history, and this was snooker perfection. He clocked up the 147 in 5 minutes and 8 seconds back in the 1997 World Championship. If you find yourself at a loss, find less than 6 minutes of your life, just over 5 minutes and indeed a mere 8 seconds, check that break out on social media, across YouTube. Just witness it. If you haven't already seen it, I urge you to seek that out, because it's snooker perfection. It's poetry in motion. It is a man perfectly in sync with what he has been put on planet Earth to do. And when you witness that, you are in the presence of the true zenith of our human qualities. And it is astonishing. Just 5 minutes and 8 seconds to sink in direct order every single ball in the table. It was seriously artistry, but so much hard craft and graft goes into that. Do yourself a favor, check out Ronnie O'Sullivan's fastest all-time maximum. I doubt that will ever be surpassed. I won't say categorically it won't, because he may well do it himself, but the nature of human endeavor is when somebody say that ain't beatable, well, you better believe somebody's going to find a way. But until that day, Ronnie O'Sullivan's 5 minutes and 8 seconds around the Green Bay's sinking a 147 is one of the finest moments of all time sport. Get it in your life. Anyway, mentioned though, he's in this conversation not simply because he's a genius at the bays, and that's a given, but he is the Mavericks' maverick. And a true genius, naturally right-handed player, he is almost as adept switching to left-handed. Now, when he first demonstrated this rare gift way back at the 1996 World Championship, this was against a Canadian player, Alain Robidoux. Alain Robidoux actually felt slighted, felt disrespected, because it hadn't been done, certainly not in competitive tournament play, where a natural right-hander, instead of using the rest when faced with a challenging shot, switched to his left hand and not only potted, but built a break. So again, yeah, Alain, I get your point, but it's just a man's natural talent. And it is astonishing. And I'm sure if Alain looks back on this now, he will appreciate that that was not with any intention of disrespecting the Canadian, but simply a reflection that he has this almost unique capacity. And it was the natural thing, therefore, to apply it in that context. But if that ain't maverick genius, tell me what is, please. And don't just tell me to yourself. I want to hear your views. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Was that disrespectful? Should he have just done what the normal person would do and use a rest, maybe missing an opportunity to build a bigger break? When it was just as easy, perhaps easier, to just play the thing left-handed. I'm in the latter camp personally, but if you do feel as though that was disrespectful, I'd love to hear from you. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Well, it surely was a lovely little bit of maverick genius. It was actually during this tournament, though, 96, that the Rockets showed that trade-off between maverick genius and flashes of kind of erratic behavior, where he would actually assault a press officer. Again, much like Zlat in that previously focused Ibrahimovic moment that I analyzed, he would assault a press officer, for which the sports governing body, the WPBSA, the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association, gave him a suspended 2-year ban and a £20,000 fine. in 1998 Irish Masters, he was actually stripped of the title and the prize money when a post-match drug test demonstrated evidence of cannabis in his system. Now, I don't want to get on my, pun intended, high horse here, quite how that would influence positively his performance, I don't quite know. But nevertheless, again, that maverick quality coming to the fore there. He was certainly stripped of his title and the prize money. And, you know, that's now in the record books. But it was moving on, though, into the 2000s that Ronnie would really battle, literally, with clinical depression. And this was visibly displayed after he was ground down and eventually lost 11 of the final 14 frames in the World Championship quarterfinal, losing to Peter Ebdon. He was wilting. It was actually painful to witness. And as much in the same vein as the already referenced 147 in 5 minutes and 8 seconds was sporting poetry to see a man suffer, wilt, losing 11 of 14 frames, being ground down by the just granite-like qualities of Ebdon. It was tragic, and again, a reflection of a very tragic condition that many, many suffer from, which is clinical depression. If you do fall into that camp, I would massively encourage you to seek support from your friend network, online. There are so many people there to support you, and I would encourage you to do just that. Anyway, the pressures of the game and life tensions were truly palpable in 2006 at the UK Championship for Ronnie. Trailing to the legendary Stephen Hendry, Hendry remains, of course, the only man who has more world titles than Ronnie. Ronnie here in 06, trailing to Hendry by 1-4 in a best of 17 championship quarter final, would abruptly concede the match, leaving the arena. This decision resulted in another £20,000 fine, £20,800 to be precise. Again, that trade-off, that tragic trade-off almost, between the true genius, the maverick genius, and that temperament that so many are bedeviled with. However, despite all this, success on the bays, given his unique gifts, was never far away and always a consistent aspect of the story, continued narrative that is Rocket Ronnie O'Sullivan. In 2007, he claimed his third Masters title and bagged a fourth UK Championship. He would claim his third World title in 2008, beating Ali Carter 18-8 in the final. After this, though, his form would dip dramatically and the Rocket plummeted out of the top 10 in the world rankings, something that for a man of his unique gifts would have been considered unthinkable. Now, credit to Ronnie here, this actually motivated him to start working with his friend and renowned psychiatrist, Steve Peters, in 2011. This signified a resurgent Ronnie, and he would claim his fourth world title in 2012, after which he would heap praise on the guru and the support guidance that Peters provided. Again, if you are empathizing with this depression quality, please, I'm not saying go find Stephen Peters, but there are experts who are equivalent who will be able to assist you. Do seek the support. It may well help you. Anyway, moving on. Despite this success, Ronnie would take an extended break from the Pro Tour. But demonstrated his true genius when, despite only playing one competitive match all season, he returned to the Crucible, the home of snooker, for the UK, the World Championships in 2013, and he would bag his fifth world crown. If, again, the Mavericks, Maverick. Only one game all season, you rock up to the Crucible and you claim the crown. I would assert that only Ronnie O'Sullivan is capable of doing that. It's mind-blowing. I'm struggling to grasp an equivalency. If you can do that, if you can provide something that would be even in the same conversation as that, literally only one game for a whole season, all the other players are battle-hardened. They've had a whole campaign. They've toured the world. They've got their game tight. Can't beat O'Sullivan, who turns up to the World Championships in 2013 with just one warm-up match and then sweeps the field, grabbing that fifth world title. Love to hear from you. Tweet at Veron Sport if you can help me out here and come up with something that in the sporting and world would be analogous to that. In 2014, he would beat Mark Selby 10-4 to earn a fifth Masters title. In the same year, 2014, he would make a third straight world final, but Selby would get a modicum of revenge for his Masters loss, beating Ronnie by 18-14. He would, though, beat a new prodigy, maybe a man who has comparable talents. Watch out for the career of Judd Trump. Will Judd surpass Ronnie O'Sullivan? Be great to trace that career trajectory. Ronnie beat Judd Trump 10-9 in the 2014 UK Championship, his fifth success at the UK Champs. Flashes, though, again, of that maverick nature came to the display in 2015, where he chose not to defend his UK title, citing debilitating insomnia. Moving on to 2017, he would bag back-to-back Masters titles, the latter a record seventh win in this tournament. He also bagged a brace of UK championships in 2017 and 2018, which saw him earn 19 titles in the already mentioned famed snooker triple crown. That level of 19, which has now been lifted up a notch to 20, saw him surpass the iconic Stephen Hendry, whose haul had stood on 18. So whilst Hendry has bragging rights from the world championship perspective, overall, the winningest man in snooker is the Rocket. 2019 saw him clock up that historic 1,000 century breaks. The first, and as I mentioned, only player to achieve this astonishing feat. And then just a few months ago, again at the home of snooker, the Crucible up in Sheffield, O'Sullivan beat his foe Mark Selby in a semi-final epic, battling back from 14-16 down to go on to beat Selby, and then in the final destroy Kieran Wilson 18-8, claiming his sixth world title, and in doing that surpassing Hendry's record of 36 ranking titles, bagging his total in the Triple Crown to 20. The career of this man is almost beyond compare. Literally, only Stephen Hendry can rival him, and that is only because he has that one more world championship. And who's to say Ronnie won't claim his seventh next year? It would be a brave man to back against the Rocket. That victory, though, as I mentioned, in this year's Worlds, saw him become the oldest player to win a world title since Ray Reardon back in 78. So, again, what a kind of bookend to a career which still goes on, still many titles ahead. But to go from the youngest player in the history of the game to claim a major ranking title to the second oldest, again, through all the adversity, for all the trials and tribulations, for all the maverick genius qualities, you simply have to admire that consistency, that perseverance. And it boils down to a real love for his gift for snooker. That being said, we are talking sporting mavericks, and I've said it many times already. Truly, for my money, Ronnie is the Mavericks Maverick. There's more Maverick madness since Barry Hearn took control of world snooker back in 2010. O'Sullivan has been publicly outspoken in his criticisms, taking umbrage with heightened travel expectancy. Indeed, he disputes and dislikes vehemently the flat 128 draw style of tournament play, which dictates that top pros are now required to play more rounds against lower ranked opponents in order to gain access to the big tournaments. And he is massively, massively outspoken on what he often deems in his head. And he's very credible. He's traveled the world. He's played in big venues. He is massively outspoken in the fact that he believes that a lot of the venues that they have to go through this process to get to the big tournaments is held at venues that he dubs below par, unacceptable. I don't want to comment on that, but if you've got views, tweet us at Verulam Sport. Moving on, though, he's had numerous occasions where, whilst he is the 147 king, he's deliberately altered his shot selection in recent years to limit himself, to deny himself the opportunity of adding to that 147 haul. Now, that's a deliberate protest to reduced prize money that's been offered for achieving the goal, the feat, the holy grail of snooker, a 147. So he's actively making a protest in live time where a 147 was within his grasp. He would maybe sink a pink instead of going for the black, meaning that he'd finish on 146 or something equivalent. It's very deliberate. He knows precisely what he's doing and is an act of protest against the reduction in prize money for bagging 147s. Is that churlish? Is that childish? Is it just a man really saying, I don't need the money? It ain't about the money. It's about you devaluing this great holy grail of our sport. I could clock 147s up. I could do it all day and all night long. If you don't make it worthy for me, then it ain't worth doing. I'd love your views. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Anyway, in the most recent World Championships we mentioned, again, he was not without controversy. He actually would go on to criticise the standard of some of the modern players, stating, I would have to lose an arm and a leg to fall out of the top 50. It was a bold statement. Many of the big players and many of the big pundits found it deeply offensive and a slur on the game. But if you actually really delve into that statement, he's not saying that he would drop out of the top 10. He's saying he'd drop out of the top 50. And it would take something phenomenal for that to happen. And he is simply stating that, yeah, there's the likes of Judd Trump coming through, and do watch his career. I'm fascinated to see how that new emerging Maverick gets on. But if you actually look now at the people that are still making the world finals and are still the nearest challenges to O'Sullivan, it is the likes of Williams. It is Mark Selby. And these guys are part of that era of, you know, a few years ago. So, yeah, maybe he's got a point. Again, the nature of a Maverick is they march their own beat. And you know what? I give them credit. They speak their mind. Too often in our world, people toe the party line and they, you know, they just internally have these opinions, but don't necessarily have the gumption or the audacity, perhaps, to state them. I have to give respect to Ronnie for whatever you might happen to believe or feel about the nature of his statements. He feels that at the moment. He believes that at the moment, and he speaks his mind. I think it's a good quality, but that's just my opinion. What a colourful personality he is. And, you know, again, Maverick is, I think, maybe the finest adjective. Again, far be it from me to psychoanalyse, but it's, I think, a reasonable assertion to say that this colourful, dynamic personality is a product of a very turbulent early life. He's the son of Ronald John and Maria O'Sullivan. His father actually was sentenced to life imprisonment for murder, being released back in 2010, having served 18 years in jail. His mother, latterly, was then sentenced for a year in jail for tax evasion way back in 1996, leaving Ronnie to care for his 8-year-old sister, Danielle. So the young boy had to become a man very, very early in his life. As well as being one of the greatest snooker players of all time, and quite simply, that ain't no hyperbole. That's understatement. The facts speak volumes. The purists will tell you, snooker pundits will tell you, he is, in many people's eyes, the finest exemplar of the game of snooker all time. He's actually also a brilliant runner. Do you know what I love about these sporting mavericks? And there's a little bit of me that loathes it too, but that's just my jealousy. And I will beat down the green-eyed monster because I love it, if I'm honest. I love it that these all-time greats, these maverick geniuses we've discussed tonight, they have that ability to transfer that winning attitude, that winning approach to other qualities, to other aspects of life. Yeah, Ronnie, honestly, he's an amazing runner. It's a hobby. He finds it kind of a way to, I guess in many ways, counter that depression that he's wrestled with all his life. But in 2008, he claimed a personal best time of 34 minutes and 54 seconds over 10 kilometers. I'll repeat that. 34 minutes and 54 seconds he clocked up in a 10K run back in 2008. Now, that would actually rank Ronnie in the top 1,500 10K runners in the UK. So he's not going to be an Olympic runner, but he's an elite level runner. And I just find that phenomenal. Again, it's that lesson that when you do have that mental fortitude, the application to apply yourself and become astonishing at something, you're not necessarily going to match that like for like, but you will discover that you're capable of taking those qualities and applying it to other aspects of life. I think it's a really profound lesson, and Ronnie nails it there. But as I say, a genius. And I do understand that that word is just these days devalued because it's uttered so often. But honestly, he is Einsteinian in his application of snooker. His majesty with a Q in hand is beyond compare. And I've already mentioned this, but if you don't do anything else with your rest of your afternoon or your day, find 5 minutes and 8 seconds on social media, online, seek out Ronnie O'Sullivan's fastest all-time 147, because it is sporting poetry in motion. It's mind-blowingly good. He is a living, breathing embodiment, personification, human valued emblem of the Maverick. And he is my top gun of the Mavericks. And for me, I'm now going to soar out of the danger zone and away from the sporting Mavericks. But it's been an awful lot of fun to delve into this topic. As always, a big thank you, because always our sporting debates emanate from you, the Verulam Sport listener. So keep them coming and keep involved. Tweet us at Verulam Sport. Cannot wait to hear back from you. Keep involved. Keep tweeting at Verulam Sport. Above all, keep well, keep safe. I look forward to enjoying your company and speaking with you and to you again very soon indeed.